Well, meine Damen und Herren,
perhaps we should resume. Thank you very much for coming back for the second day of this conference. It's a very encouraging sign to see that most of you actually made it. So it must be to the credit of the presenters of yesterday who did a superb job to launch this event. This morning we will start with Professor Silas Breitenbach. And it is an honor for me to introduce the real mastermind behind this event and the whole conference. Professor Breitenbach is, of course, professor for the literature, history, and religion of early Christianity here at Humboldt University. Amongst many other things, he is one of the founding directors of the Berlin Graduate School of Ancient Studies, a member of the boards of directors of the Berliner Antike Kolleg and of the Excellence Cluster Topoi, and perhaps more importantly for us today, the co-director with Professor Halloff of the Topoi B53 project on the authorization of early Christian knowledge claims in Greece. His current research focuses on early Christianity in Attica and Lycaonia, on which topic he's finishing a book with Christian Zimmermann. The title of his talk today is Naming Authority and Identity. And I suppose you all have a handout. Professor Breitenbach, please.
Thank you very much, Julian. Good morning. The handout has a map as the last page. Maybe you should tear that off and keep that next to you. Naming authority and identity. I have to make some introductory remarks on identity without talking about it because it's a very fuzzy concept. When one compares the epitaphs on Christian sepulchral monuments from Lycaonia and some adjacent areas to those on non-Christian monuments, there are some features that they all have in common. The monuments were inscribed in memory of persons, put up as memorials for fathers, mothers, wives, husbands, children, siblings. Those who put up the stones and those in whose memory they were inscribed are normally mentioned in the inscriptions. The deceased and those who mourn them are identified by those who had put up the monument and gave instruction what had to be chiseled into it. This is a form of identification that is, of course, not specifically Christian and occurs on all monuments, almost all funerary monuments. In many cultures, names are used to identify individuals. A name has the function to refer to a specific individual and to distinguish him from others, also after death. On sepulchral monuments, thus, the dead and the bereft are identified by their names. Names form the first category of evidence that remained from these Christians who lived centuries ago. Three patterns of naming can be observed. First, triple names as a variation of the original Roman pattern of naming, praenomen, family name, and cognomen. Secondly, by the time Christianity emerged, a pattern of double names, family name, and personal name was common throughout the provinces. Finally, the non-Roman pattern of a single personal name, which was the usual way of identifying persons, it also deserves attention. In all these patterns, Greek, Latin, or indigenous names are used, and in two of them, there can be a combination of names from different linguistic backgrounds. The interesting question arises if reasons can be given why people had Latin, Greek, or indigenous personal names or combinations of names from different cultural backgrounds. Another question is equally important. Where in Lycaonia do specific names or a combination of names occur, and why do they occur? We thus not only have to note how individuals, their ancestors, and siblings were named, but also where they lived. In order to answer these questions, it's necessary to analyze, categorize, and localize the use of names on monuments which can be regarded as Christian. Just a brief note on statistic. There are almost 1,400 47 names on Christian Lycaonian inscriptions. Amongst them, Paul is used 63 times, Kunon a little bit more than 24, maybe 25 times, and Alexandros just over 20 times. The text of funerary inscriptions are normally terse, and often the social relations of those mentioned can only be inferred from the names used. In this connection, Roman names become important. When Rome became an imperial power in the East, local power and influence were in the hands of those who had strong relations to the ruling class. Even before the imperial period, the traditional Roman system of personal names according to family tradition, a family name and an inherited cognomen became inadequate to distinguish between individuals. The manumission of slaves and new citizens from non-Roman or non-Italian origin led to an increase in the number of citizens, whilst the number of Roman personal names and family names was limited. The former even decreasing. Consequently, the number of those having the same family name grew unlimited. This led to a sharp increase in the use of personal cognomina during the imperial period. Frequent praenomina like Marcus, Gaius, Fronto, or Rufus were used as personal names also by Christians. And, of course, new cognomina were introduced. For in contrast to praenomina that were bound to family tradition, cognomina were potentially unlimited. It was put as personal name after the family name. The cognomen now took over the function to identify the person, and often the praenomen disappeared. Nevertheless, it is worthwhile to look first at those few cases where Christians followed Roman tradition in using free names, albeit in a slightly different form. The use of three names is not a typical phenomenon of Greek naming, and in itself it indicates Roman influence on the practice of name giving. So, secondly, tria nomina. In imperial times, the use of three names is likely to refer to Roman citizens, who usually belong to the upper classes in the provinces. Those Christians who bore three names would have had some connection to the ruling classes of Roman descent and were likely to have been Roman citizens. In Christian inscriptions, traces of the system of three names and polynomy, when more than one family name is used, this is confined to the area, you can look on your map, the area of the Lakes of the Martyrs, north of the Sultan Dalari and to Iconium. Several having the family names Aelius, Aurelius, and Flavius indicate that from the reign of Hadrian until the first quarter of the 4th century, they were Christians among upper social classes who were Roman citizens. Women who had full Roman names can be identified. In several cases, however, the female or male Latin cognomen were replaced by a Greek name which served as an individual name. The Greek name would be an indication that the person or his ancestors or her ancestors came from a provincial family and was granted Roman citizenship. In imperial times, the cognomen was given at birth, but it could also be added during lifetime, sometimes even after a decisive experience, as in the case of number 6, the martyr Futius Aelius Martyrus from 2nd century Iconium. And I will now refer to the numbers on your handout. In Lycaonia, there were, in fact, very few Christians with three names. In most cases, the praenomen and the nomen gentile are Latin, but the cognomen is often Greek, as on non-Christian monuments. These Christians came from influential families from the higher classes, as the cognomen of number 7, Gaius Iulius Patricius from Laodicea, expresses. Even before the Constitutio Antoniniana, he could have put up the inscription for his aunt Orestina, who lived an encratic life, and for his brother Menicetius. In some cases, it is the woman who came from Roman descent In the 3rd century, a certain Polites from Laodicea, Aurelius Anicetus, was married to a woman named Septima Pomponia Magna. She could be bearing either Roman first and family names and a common Latin cognomen, but Septimia could also be a nomen gentile. Then this would be a case of polynomy popular among the ruling classes in the provinces. And it would be associating Magna with the Septimii and the renowned Pomponi families whose members acted as governors of the province of Galatia. As we shall see, she could have lived in the late 2nd century. Polynomy also occurs on a monument from 4th century Laodicea. Influential Roman families like those of number 5, Flavia Iulia Flaviana, adhere to the tradition of tria nomina, albeit that Flavia is not a typical first name, but rather also a family name. The cognomen of Flavia's husband, number 9, Marcus Iulius Eugenius, and the language of the epitaph show the impact of the Greek in the eastern provinces. The cognomen which served to identify the person was chosen in the light of the Greek-speaking environment. The name Eugenius, however, still expressed that he was of noble descent, and the epitaph in his honor documents his influence and his leadership. There might be, depending how you reconstruct the inscription, another example of a traditional and influential family from Laodicea who became Christian. This is number 4. The woman again had 2 full Roman family names and a Latin cognomen, Paulina, Calpurnia Pomponia Paulina. Her names show that among her forebears were possibly freedmen of the Pomponi and the Calpurnii. Her husband was also an influential counselor of Laodicea. He also had 2 family names, Aelius Calpurnius. Under the reign of Hadrian, he probably became a freedman of the influential Calpurnii family, who held land at Kandahani near Laodicea, and was identified by a local Greek Christian cognomen, Aphthonios. In Laodicea, we thus have 2 persons bearing 3 names in the more classical sense, number 7 and number 9, and another 4 where we have polynomy, 1, 4, 5, and 10. 2 were Iulii, 5 and 7, 2 Calpurnii, 1 and 4, and 2 Pomponii, 4 and 10. Laodicea was no exception. During the 3rd century, number 2, Aelia Curtia Marcina from Filumenium bore 3 Roman names. Her husband, number 3, was called Aurelius Iulius Anthos. He thus had 2 family names and a Greek cognomen meaning bright, shining. The large stele from white marble displays the wealth of the couple, and their polynomous family names indicate their highest social status. It is notable that they were the only couple where the family name Aurelius is embedded between the pre and the cognomen, although there are so many Aurelii. The upper class seem to have avoided Aurelius as a family name. There are 3 cases from Tyrrheum, 2 in an extended family, where Christian males bear 2 Roman names and a Greek name in the place of the traditionally inherited cognomen. In the case of number 8, Iulius Cassius Eusebius, the son of Gaius, it is likely that we have another case of polynomy. This seems also to be the case of numbers 12 and 13. The son and father Septimius Pomponius Mnesios, the uncle or the brother of Septimius Pomponius Trophimus. It is very likely that number 10, Septimia Pomponia Magna, whose traces were found in Laodicea were related to this family of Septimi Pomponi from Tyrium. Their aunt or sister bore an indigenous name as a cognomen, Septimia Pomponia Dade, that is number 12. The additional Greek names added to the Roman first and family names are frequent names, often used by Christians in the region. These Christians belonged to the Casi and Pomponi and were probably Roman citizens. The cognomen of Julius Cassius Eusebius underlines his piety. The name of his wife, Aurelia Theodote, whose family became citizens after 212, expressed that she was perceived as God-given. The widely used Greek name Menesithios entails the incentive to remember God. This enhanced its use by the parents of Septimus Pomponius, who himself gave the name to his son. The wife of Septimus Pomponius, Menesithios Jr., was a deacon, and she erected the grave. Her name is difficult to reconstruct. It's not fully readable, but diaconesses normally came from more influential circles, as we heard yesterday. It is thus probably that she had the Latin cognomen Celsa. It is exactly in this inscription, the mixture of the Latin Celsa, Greek Menesithios, or Trophimos, and the indigenous cognomina Dada, in one inscription of the Septimi Pomponi, which makes it impossible to classify the family as Roman. The choice of Septimius as first name and Pomponius as family name could indicate that they were granted citizenship under the rule of Septimius Severus through the mediation of the Pomponi, who were governors of the province of Galatia. The scant onomastic evidence, if I can summarize this section, suggests that in the second and the third century, there were Christians who became citizens under Hadrian or came from families who became very influenced in Central Asia Minor, like the Casi, the Calpurni, the Curti, the Iuli, and the Pomponi. They were confined to the larger cities, Philomenium, Tyrium, Laodicea, and to Iconium. The men played important roles in the cities. Sometimes they were part of the ruling elite. Whereas the Latin cognomina were usual, the Greek cognomina they use often express their piety. More of the women had Roman relations, and some took office in Christian communities. The recurrent phenomenon of polynomy underlies the fact that these Christians were from the ruling elite in the region. Now come to double names, number two. In some cases, men and women had two family names. The phenomenon of double names, polynomy, the use of two family names therefore needs further investigation. The occurrence of double names among Christians almost always includes a Roman family name. There where we do not have two family names, at least one of them is a Roman family name. A Roman family name followed by an individual name is most frequent. These names fit the pattern normally used in the provinces during imperial times. A family name without the preceding praenomen and followed by a personal name to identify the individual. The individual name is not only in the traditional position of the cognomen, it also took over its function to distinguish the individual from the other family members. The occurrence of a Roman family name and a Greek or indigenous personal name amongst Christians reach back into the years of Hadrian. So we turn to the Aeli, where you also have a list. We must remember that Hadrian granted citizenship to the native community in Iconium, and during his reign there was a deduction of veterans in the region of Lystra. Aelius, number 11, precedes Antonius, 21, Patricius in Laodicea, and could perhaps be assumed as the family name of the counselor, number 24, Proclus of Iconium. In replacing the cognomen, an individual name could, however, also be expressing the occupation, as in the case of 25, Aelius Sacredon, a priest from Laodicea. Aelius is also followed by Greek names in Laodicea, in Gdanmaa, and in Iconium, as you can see from the list. Interesting, there are no Aelii with indigenous personal names in the position of the cognomen. Aelia, the female form of the family name, is followed by Latin names in Laodicea, by Greek names in Tyrrheum, Laodicea, and Iconium. You can see that on the list. Aelia is also not followed by indigenous personal names. That is completely different in the case of Aurelius and Aurelia. From the personal names, it is clear that the first Christians attested in Iconium came either from the descendants of the Roman settlers or from the Greek population of the polis. As the family name indicates, the families of these Christians were most likely to have become Roman citizens under Hadrian. Those from Kindirats near Laodicea were most probably brought there by Hadrian to oversee the imperial estate. In both cases, it is clear that by the 2nd century, Christianity, initially established by Paul and his co-workers, found its way into the ruling classes of the colony at Iconium and the imperial state near Laodicea. It is worthwhile to go into the family relations of the Aelii, but I will not do this. And of course, the occurrence of Aurelius in some of the members of the extended families on these inscriptions show that some of them must be dated in the 3rd century. After AD 212, the family name Aurelius was introduced on a large scale, also in Lycaonia. When the use of the family name Aurelius soared, its identifying quality declined steeply, so that the personal name following it had to identify the person. We thus refrain from listing the Aurelii in the same manner, since apart from expressing Roman citizenship, the defining value, the identifying value of the family name Aurelius is very limited. For reasons of time, I will not go into the Flavii. I will just say 2/3 of the Christian men bearing the family name Flavius came from Laodicea and vicinity. Again, save number 16 and 21, they did not have Roman or Latin personal names. In the cases of the Flavii, number 9, Aniketus, of number 12 and 23, we have little information. The others, however, are classed through specific occupation, another form of ascribing of identity. 4 were goldsmiths, aurari, number 8, number 11, number 19, and number 20. Another 4 Flavii served in the military, 2 Augustali, 14 and 21, and a bearer of the standard, number 22, and a signifier, number 10. There is good reason to suspect that under Constantine, artisans and military personnel in Laodicea were given special privileges, their social status being expressed by placing the name Flavius in front of their personal name. The reasons for this, however, is not clear to me. Maybe you can help me. I come to 3rd, to single personal names. I skip the Latin names, just mentioning them, and you will see from the list, those are the names that have a high, with the exception of Paul, a very, very high frequency all over the Roman Empire. The first row, then the second row, shows us that people were willingly accepting the names of the emperors as personal names, and then you can get an impression of the type of names that were used also. The single Greek names, there is a, apart from Alexandros, a very, very interesting article by Peter Turnemon on the naming or the use of name of Greek heroes. And there you can see that Christians also followed that tradition. I will not treat the biblical names. Biblical names are very, very important, but they would take too long now to treat. And I come to Christian names. Among Christians, theophoric names derived from the names of the Greek gods did occur, but it was quite limited to those gods revered in the region. For example, mostly we have theophoric names referring to Zeus, Diogenia, Diogenes, Diocles, Dios, Diophantos, and Diotrephes, or derived from Ze, the poetic form of Zeus. Less frequent are names like Apollinarius, Apollonius, Asclepiades, and Aphrodisius, Hermes and Eros, and of course Demetrius, but they do occur. However, there's an important addition. The New Testament already reveals that early Christianity followed the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible and used the word Theos as designation for the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and of Jesus. Later Christians seem to have preferred theophoric names containing the name Theos to classical Greek theophoric names. For example, Timotheos, who comes from this region, God-fearer. That the name of Paul's primary co-worker is used 13 times does not surprise. What is surprising, though, is that the bearers of the name are, with a few exceptions, either deacons or presbyteroi, or fathers or sons of presbyters, or a servant of the Lord. The name Metasithios, God-rememberer, was used by 5 Christians from Lycaonia. For the entire period and over the whole era under discussion, there are various instances where the names of Christians start with Theos, Theodoros, or Theodulos, or women seen as gift by God, Theodote or Theokitiste. Equivalent to the Latin domina, curia was used to designate the lady of the house and express the authority of the person. Like curios and curion, it was not often used as a personal name. The names curiake and curiakos, however, are widely used. On Christian monuments now, they are to be understood in the light of the earliest Christian confession that Jesus is the Lord and mean from the Lord or belonging to the Lord. In the whole area under investigation, the use of the names is attested at least a dozen of times. The frequent use of particular names by Christians did not always have such a central theological or Christological background. There are, of course, those names which can go back to famous Greeks, but their popularity under Christians must be for a reason. In his work, De Inani Gloria et Educandis Liberis, John Chrysostom advises his audience not to follow Greek customs. Through name-giving, Christians should give their children an incentive to virtue. From the very beginning, they should not be eager to call their children after the forebearers, father and mother and grandfather and great-grandmother, but rather, I quote, after the righteous, martyrs, bishops, apostles. This one should be called Peter, the other John, and another bear the name of another of the saints. In the 5th century, Theodoret of Cyrus underlined the apotropaic function of the names of the martyrs and saints. I quote, "All folk know the names of the martyrs better than those of their close friends. They are eager to give the names of those to their children and to give them security and protection. A survey of the names of Lycaonian Christians given to their children shows compliance with the position of Chrysostom and Theodoret. It is likely that they were expressing a shift in the practice of naming, which already was in place, and a shift that went well beyond the Syrian Antioch. Anenkletos, meaning impeccable, is not a Greek name, but was used by Christians in the northern Lycaonian cities as early as the 3rd century. According to Irenaeus of Lyon, Anenkletos succeeded Linus as bishop of Rome. The historical accuracy of Irenaeus' account might be doubted, but not that by the second century Anenkletos was remembered as the second bishop of Rome. The name stands in the tradition of the pastoral epistles. Anastasia and Anastasios are used as Greek names, though more often for Christians. They express the central hope of the resurrection. In Greek, Basilissa occurs not that often as a female name, but in Christian inscriptions from Lycaonia, there are 14 instances spread over a wide area. Anastasia and Basilissa were two of the earliest Christian martyrs. The popularity of the name is probably due to the legend of the martyrdom of the two, Basilissa and Anastasia, in Rome. We can continue with that. We'll also apply to the name Hesychios, one of the 40 martyrs of Sebaste, or Kunon, which is the name occurring most after the name of Paul, and even the name of Trophimos. There is a tradition about the martyrdom of Trophimos in nearby Synnada in Phrygia during the reign of Probus. So I conclude. The North Lycaonian cities, especially the estate near Laodicea Combusta, and along the royal road, we have clear indication of Christians coming from the higher ranks of the society, some of them definitely Roman citizens. This also applies to Iconium. There's a very strong impact of biblical names on the name giving, which I didn't treat. The impact of theological categories in the theophoric names like Theodoros and Kyriakos is important, and very many of the names can be explained with reference to the reception of the martyr tradition. I thank you for your time. Thank you.